Welcome to the Speech Uncensored podcast. My name is Leanne. I'm your host. And we are right in the middle of a series called The One Thing. And it's where I get to sit down with SLPs and talk about our one thing that we're really passionate about that we want other people to know. So I'm joined by Tyler Roman today. Hi, Tyler.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And our topic today is on interdisciplinary care in the inpatient rehabilitation setting. I'm really excited for this topic. I think it's a really good one. And before we dive in, I just want to learn more a little bit about you.
Cool. So my name is Tyler Roman. I'm a speech therapist. I live in Columbus, Ohio, where I work at a 72-bed inpatient rehabilitation hospital. I serve as our stroke committee co-lead there. So I work closely with an OT and we do various process improvements for stroke-related care. So a lot of interdisciplinary care there. I have worked there. I did my CFY there and I did my last clinical placement as a grad student there, but I also dabbled in acute care for PRN for about 2 years and kind of learned I really like IPR, that's kind of my home base and where I like treating. And that whole stint doing PRN work kind of helped, you know, grow my knowledge of like the continuum of care for speech therapy and kind of helped get me to where I am today of learning like how important interdisciplinary care is in the IPR setting. But outside of speech, I like to spend time with friends and family. I have a nephew. He's 2.5, so he's a lot of fun right now. I like to stay active, run, play tennis, go to concerts with friends. I'm a very social person, so, you know, kind of sticks with the collaboration topic.
Perfect. Excellent. All right. So how'd you learn your one thing?
So my one thing kind of just developed naturally, I would say. Like I was saying, you know, I started an IPR where interdisciplinary collaboration is kind of built into what we do. You know, we have weekly team meetings, especially at, so I guess IPRs, you know, they vary, they're different from place to place, but at my place we have teams where, you know, I work with the same PT and OT and we treat the same patients. So I'm on two teams because speech caseload's typically a little lower, but I'm talking to the same people all throughout the day. So we're constantly talking about our patients and what the barriers are and what they need to do to get home. You know, the nature of inpatient rehab is everybody wants to go home. So, you know, people come in and we're fighting for, you know, showing them these cognitive deficits, these communication deficits, right? So everybody comes in and they're like, I'm fine. My thinking's not off. Nothing's different. I want to walk. I want to go to the bathroom. And it kind of started from, you know, how do I open my patient's eyes? Like, how do I work on what they want to work on? And how do I build their insight into these deficits? So really it was born through talking to my coworkers and understanding what PT and OTs do a little more. You know, I always kind of had that surface level understanding of like PTs help you walk and OTs help you go to the bathroom or whatever it is. And then one of my good friends now, her name's Beth, an OT, she really helped build my understanding of like the scope of OT and how, you know, it's not just getting dressed. There's cognition, there's vision, there's all these things that really overlap with speech therapy. And, you know, it's not just, you know, memory games and swallowing. There's this whole cognitive piece that, you know, we can really focus on ADLs and IEDLs.
Like, I really like how you gave the rundown about how the patient's primary goal is to go home or to walk or both of those. It's actually both of those. Let's be honest. They want to walk so that they can go home. And finding where we fit in there can be a little bit of a challenge. But as speech and language pathologists, we love a challenge. So that's what we do. When we go into the literature or we go to CEUs or read articles and blogs or whatever, like, is there a lot of information out there that is tailored to the unique features of the inpatient rehab setting?
You know, I think yes and no. You know, when we think about when we go to CEUs and, you know, I follow a lot of Instagrams and I have some blogs that email me in. you know, more often than not, we're talking about really acute topics like post-surgery and post-extubation and these things that we don't experience in IPR, or we're talking about, you know, there's so many great evidence-based cognitive treatments that maybe don't necessarily work perfectly in the IPR setting, right? So we know to do good functional treatments, we need to work on do it the way they actually do the cognitive task, or we need to work on things that matter to them. And it's hard to replicate, you know, medication management when your nurse brings you your medications on time every day. It's hard to preach like, oh, use a schedule when I show up to your room and I say it's time for speech. You know, it's hard to do meal prep when every meal's brought to you. So yes and no, you know, a lot of those treatments are tailored for like, I'm at home, like home health, or outpatient, you know, you get home and you go, oh wait, it's not just walking anymore. Right. So like now I'm realizing like I'm forgetting things, I'm messing up my pills, or I'm forgetting to take them. And then that's when you can implement all these, you know, great evidence-based treatments, but we can't always do that necessarily in IPR. So it's doing our best to replicate those tasks to start that insight building, is how I kind of think of it. And, or it's, you know, maybe not necessarily we're jumping straight to those IADLs, but it's, again, the topic's interdisciplinary care. So going to our PT and OTs and, you know, that metacognition, that insight building, you know, I'm thinking like a right CBA, right? They have terrible insight. They don't understand. They're having trouble getting from the bed to the wheelchair, and it's implementing some of those things in the moment. So I know like pause, prompt, praise is one of those metacognitive strategies. Stop, relax, refocus is another one. And we can implement those things into sequencing a transfer. We can implement, you know, that into doing hemi dressing for, you know, a hemiplegic patient. So yes and no, I guess is the best answer to the question.
Excellent. Now, I want you to think back into the past, and how would your practice be different if you learned about this approach earlier in your career?
You know, I think, like I was saying before, you know, I follow a lot of blogs and I see a lot of Instagrams, and we see this, like, I think it's like no workbook culture, where it's like, do the evidence-based treats. And I think especially as like a young grad, you see this, and you know, some of what you learn is like the easiest thing is grabbing a worksheet or doing something like that. And, you know, you kind of start and you don't understand functional cognition and you think you're addressing these deficits. And then you start to learn more and more of, you know, in order to really improve these things, I need to change how I work. So I think it's part of that stress and fitting into the puzzle of IPR and not feeling that like, you know, we go to our weekly team meetings and it's how far are they walking? How much assistance on the toilet? Not feeling like, you know, I'm a part of the team. So now it's going in, and when you build those relationships, and, you know, it's a lot easier to get through my day when I'm not going to the treatment. Like, what am I doing with this patient? It's like, no, I know PT told me they're having trouble sequencing their transfer. So instead of sequencing random picture cards, I'm sequencing the steps that PT worked on one session before me. So it makes my day run a lot smoother. It makes my day a lot more meaningful. And it, you know, gives me a sense of purpose in the IPR setting.
I love that. When I've worked PRN for inpatient rehab in the past, it slows down the process. Because when you work every day, when it's your 9 to 5, 5 days a week, you know the patients, you know your colleagues, you really have a feel for the progression and what you're going to do each day. And if the day brings variability, you can adapt to it quickly. Mm-hmm. So it's a real special treat for me coming in as PRN. I have never seen these people before. I see the staff occasionally, and I'll read the note from the day before to get a feel for like what I'm walking into, and they may present 100% different, like when I walk in the room. And so I mentioned that because as you were talking about finding that flow in it, I got the impression that it actually would reduce the burden of prep for you, because you are dovetailing in nicely with the work that PT and OT are doing. And so you don't have to spend time scrolling through a workbook or something to print off pages and fill a folder that then you're going to carry into the room and work on or whatever. And so that just made me think of my own experience when I go in there and I feel really, really slow because I have to do all this like background work as the PRN to like understand who the patient is, what they've been working on, like get up to speed in like no time flat. And then oftentimes there's a responsibility to plan for the next day, mm-hmm. like whoever's going to see them again. So I'm like, if we just dovetailed in that way, it would really reduce a lot of that behind the scenes burden.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, like you said, you're seeing them every day. So it's a blessing and a curse where, you know, just being an outpatient, you see the patient once a week and then they come back and they're like, well, this was hard. So it's like, well, let's work on that. But when I've seen you, it's day 30 and I've seen you, you know, 29 times already and we feel like we've exhausted everything, it can, you know, truly get difficult as a clinician and difficult for the patient because they're like, I'm tired of this. We've done it all. You know, how many times are we going to work on medications or finances or cooking or whatever it is or sequencing a transfer? So, you know, as a patient progresses physically and we start to see new deficits, we can work that into our care and keep it meaningful and keep patients engaged. You know, just like if we are going to do a cognitive task and maybe we have a patient who isn't buying into it fully, right? So, well, can we incorporate something physical into the session? You know, maybe you need to work on your sitting balance. So let's do this cognitive task on the edge of the mat table where we're working on your sitting balance and you're still, you know, doing something cognitive and working on sitting balance. Or maybe, you know, your endurance is bad, so let's do it in standing. I can get a patient standing and we can, you know, again, do a pillbox while standing, right? So it's talking to your partners and saying, you know, is this practical? What's their balance like? You know, what could I do to engage them in it? But it really just starts with building those relationships with your PT and OT counterparts. I think a lot of times we get in our, you know, speech bubble. I know, especially like when I first started, a lot of the speech people, they ate speech ate together and then the PTs and OTs ate in the gym, right? It was just that like natural divide. I think that sometimes happened. And fortunately that's changed a lot since I first started and we all kind of eat together and it makes that communication so much easier, but it's getting outside of like speech island, right? It's opening communication. It's easier to collaborate when you have those relationships.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Okay. So I feel like you've been touching on this just a little bit, but I'm so ready for you to really dive in on how you put this into practice now. What does this interdisciplinary care in the inpatient rehab setting look like for you on a day-to-day basis?
So, you know, normally starting out, we all show up at the same time and it's, you know, doing, like you said, like kind of getting that chart review of like, who am I seeing today? How'd their night go? You know, what's going on? And then it's getting on the same page for, you know, what are you noticing about, you know, their transfer? What can I work in? It's just starting that conversation. But the other thing is, you know, talking about what was said, because so often, I'm sure you've experienced this, is where you're hearing one story from a patient and then you're teammates are hearing another story. So it's getting that full picture of like, okay, what's really the situation going home? Like, what do we actually need to work on? What support do you have? And then it's starting something and then handing it off to the next therapist. So, you know, just because I've started something doesn't mean like PT and OT can't work on this. So one like example I can think of this is, you know, I work with stroke patients primarily for the most part. And one big thing with stroke is that it's a preventable, not preventable, you can reduce your risk factors, all right? So understanding what your risk factors are, how you manage them, what the signs and symptoms are saying you're ever going to have a stroke. And we developed this. It's based on something called the Stroke Patient Education Retention, the SPUR, and it's 5 questions. So one thing, you know, because my team, my PT and my OTs also work with stroke patients, it's something we're constantly bouncing off each other. So, you know, if I start that and give them the 5 questions, which it's what type of stroke did you have? What are your risk factors? What medications are you on? what should you do if you have a stroke? And then it's, you know, if I start that, it's okay, they remembered for be fast, you know, 4 of the 6 things. And then I find my PT, and then in their session, they bring it in, and then we put that in the note. And then we can kind of see for these things that we're trying to ingrain in the patient how they did. So it's really that like documentation standard of communicating in person and being able to find it in the notes that makes that so much easier.
Earlier in the talk, you mentioned that building insight into deficits is a really important area that you find yourself working in often. Mm-hmm. Did you want to unpack that a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, I think step one of inpatient rehab really is building that insight. It's, you know, sometimes patients come in and, you know, one of the first questions I'm sure most of us ask is, you know, we explain what speech is and we say, have you noticed any deficits in these areas? And it's pretty often where patients are saying no, right? And then we dive in and we start noticing things and, you know, maybe we're, you know, we typically start with an informal assessment, but we kind of get an idea like memory seems a little off, you know, they're having trouble focusing. And then it's that, you know, explanation of like acute care, they're trying to get you medically stable. Here's where we're trying to start getting things to get you home, right? So it's, you know, implementing some of those more standardized tests where it's, you know, an R bands or a CLQT or whatever your go-to thing is, and saying, you know, here's kind of where you fell. What do you think about that? Like, we know going home, you're going to have to manage X, Y, and Z. You did these things before. Let's do a pill box. You know, you messed up 5 pills. You know, you're having trouble understanding the contingencies of the directions. You know, do you think this is different? Do you think that, you know, this is an issue going home? And it's starting that, you know, if they don't know something's wrong, how do we get it better? And really just ingraining that into a patient where it's like, you know, this is normal. You had this, you know, acquired brain injury and things can get off. And it's that counseling role of an SLP of like, it's okay that these things are off, but we can't make them better if you don't know they're off. So I think day one, that's something I like to kind of start on eval, is building that rapport of like, you know, this could be different. It's okay. Maybe it isn't different. You know, everybody's cognitive abilities are different. Are you open to exploring them and seeing if they're off? And it's getting on the same page. And then when things do go wrong, you know, you give that corrective feedback of, no, this was an error. Like, how could this be an issue? So it's really in every task you do. And it's not just, you know, I know one thing, bringing it back to interdisciplinary care, is like, it's easy to get with your PT and OT counterparts and be like, you know, the patient did this today. It was really weird, right? Well, it's like, okay, well, no, that's a cognitive deficit. You need to give that feedback to build that metacognitive awareness. You know, we see it a lot. I think, right, CVAs are the perfect example of needing that metacognitive awareness because they don't realize, you know, they're not scanning to the left. They're not threading their arm through their shirt. So it's in everything we do, you know, pointing it out in a tasteful way, right? Saying, you know, it's okay. That was an error, but it's okay. And it's a real fine line of, you know, keeping the patient on your good side and them wanting to work with you. Cause again, you do have to work with them. Sometimes I work with patients 90 minutes a day, right? On cognitive skills. So it's touching on it without touching on it too much.
That's so true. It's a really delicate balance because, you know, they're put in this position where they're in the hospital, but they're working on getting better, getting stronger to return home. And then we come in there and we point out everything that's not working right with their brain.
Right.
And that can be really upsetting for people.
Absolutely.
And so, like you said, building that rapport so that they know that we're coming from a place of support and help and that we're not trying to bring them down or drag them down is really important. Super. Yeah.
And that's where I think you can really, you know, do that patient-centered care of like what works for you. Like maybe I'm noticing these things. Like what's the best approach to make sure you're not making those errors? Or how can I support you? You know, I have this treatment or this treatment or this treatment, and what do you think would work? And while maybe we're not going to implement it fully in the IPR setting, it's starting those conversations. You know, I always want to set up the continuum of care so that when they get to their outpatient, it's not, what were you doing in speech before, right? It's like, oh, I've heard these things. I understand like how they could be helpful. Like I'm always, while I'm simulating it, bringing it back to like, when you leave here, how could this work into everyday life? So it's giving those options, building the idea, and maybe I'm not the person to necessarily do these super functional everyday things where you're actually doing them. I at least want to get the ball rolling for the person who is.
Mm. So talk to me a little bit about how collaboration extends beyond working with PT and OT, because of course we collaborate them very closely on the inpatient rehab unit. But where else does that extend?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just PT and OT, absolutely. You know, thinking about dysphagia, you know, it's pretty often where, you know, I have a patient with an NG tube and, you know, it's Thursday and we want to get that out. It's like starting that calorie count instantly, talking to the dietitians, you know, opening that line of communication saying like, I just did a trial tray, they ate everything, like, let's get the ball rolling on this so we can get this out. Or even, you know, we thinking about more like aphasia nursing. I think it's easy to assume sometimes patient needs, but it's what are the breakdowns that nursing's experiencing, right? You know, where is the patient frequently incontinent? You know, are we coming in and, you know, they're not using their call light, and it's how can I support them, right? But sometimes, you know, we're in our wheelhouse. We don't even realize these things are a problem, but it's reaching out to people outside of, again, PT and OT, because if we're not seeing it, sometimes we don't realize it's happening. So it's really talking to everybody who's involved in care and opening that communication, which seems kind of silly. And I think it seems like common sense, but how often is it we do a quick handoff at the end of our treatment to the nurse and we don't really say like, how are they doing for you? You know, you noticing anything? What could I be doing to help you?
All right, Tyler, I feel like you've covered your topic pretty well. Is there anything else that we need to dive into before we wrap up?
You know, I think with the topic, it's one of those things that, again, like I just said, it feels like common sense, but it's really remembering that, you know, in the inpatient rehab setting, it's a little different in that, you know, in order to do this patient-centered care, it really does take a different level of collaboration because we're working towards a different goal. We're working towards getting home. So it's stopping and saying, what are the breakdowns in the moment that are preventing that safe discharge home? How can I support the physical functioning? Because again, with physical comes cog. So it's working as a team and strengthening relationships with your teammates and understanding their scope of practice and their treatments and how, you know, typical SLP tasks can be modified to incorporate needs that aren't sometimes so obvious.
Tyler, I really appreciated how you kind of view this interdisciplinary collaboration on the inpatient rehab unit by recognizing what a unique role we fill on that unit when you're looking at it through like what our role is on acute care. And that's really like maintaining medical stability or achieving medical stability, keeping them from getting worse, helping them get better. Like that's the goal on acute care. Right. They transition over into inpatient rehab, and that's where you can really start to sink your teeth in on that rehabilitation aspect of it.
Right.
On acute care, oftentimes they can get started on that, but I feel like inpatient rehab is where it really gets to like open up and flourish.
Right.
And then I would love it if you shared your thoughts on like the steps after inpatient rehab. Like there's a couple different places that patients will discharge to. And I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
Right. And, you know, that's kind of multifaceted because it's not always black and white on why someone's going to a certain location. You know, one big thing that really plays into where they're going to end up is, you know, obviously how they're functioning, right? That's a big part of it. But then also family or friend support comes into it too. You know, someone who doesn't have any immediate family who can do that max assist transfer on to the toilet all day for the foreseeable future, you know, they're probably going to go to a skilled nursing facility, right?
And I might be opening up a whole can of worms by asking about like where patients go after discharge from inpatient rehab. But like you touched on it exactly. It's a couple factors, like what their level of function is and what their level of support is.
Right.
And for our scope of practice, like communication is a big part of that on their independence for some of those things. But so rarely we'll determine like where they go.
And it's funny because like someone can be, you know, they can't say a word and have like severely impaired cognition, but they're walking 180 feet. That's always like the magic number they say, and they're going home. So it's hard. And especially, you know, again, bringing it back to IPR is like, we think about like communication needs and all that. It's like half the time they don't even know what they want to talk about because they're not home. They're not in everyday life. Like, again, how do you say like, I want to build my communication board or my AC device or, you know, pick functional topics for an aphasia treatment when it's like, most people don't care at that point. So yeah, discharge destination definitely impacts like what you're targeting and how important, you know, the interdisciplinary care is, right? So I'm talking about like sequencing a transfer. Like obviously that matters a lot more if the destination is home health or, you know, outpatient where like you need to be functioning at a certain level. So it definitely can be utilized to guide your treatment on some level for sure. But again, that continuum plays a part in selecting, you know, functional needs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I threw that wrench into our conversation because I feel like it does matter, like you just said, when you're planning your therapy and your interventions, not only what they're capable, able to do in the moment, what is needed in the moment to help them achieve their goals, but it's also like, what does our expected discharge look like?
Right.
And how can we best equip them to be successful in that setting too? So all of that, the past, the present, and the future, like you have to be considering all of that.
Yeah.
Like every day, constantly when you're working inpatient rehab.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Cause if you need to manage your IADLs, but you know, your wife can do them for you. Like, yeah, it matters, but maybe there's another fish you want to fry in the meantime. So, you know, where you're going, what your support is, makes a huge difference in like what I'm going to put the most energy into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thanks for going down that rabbit hole with me, Tyler.
that could be its own thing right there.
I know. Right. Okay. Well, it looks like we've covered everything. I've really enjoyed this talk. Unpacking the uniqueness and the challenges around inpatient rehab is such a treat. Like, I think it's so great because, yeah, I think you're right. Like, I don't believe it really gets talked about with in-depth understanding on a regular basis. Like, I would love to do a poll of graduate clinicians on like what they think inpatient rehab is like and see how close to the market is. Cause I don't know, maybe better information is getting out there.
Yeah. But, I mean, I feel like before I got my placement, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. We found our own placements and I ended up where I work now. And I was like, oh, this is a thing. Like, truly, that's how it went down.
Love that. Oh my gosh. That sounds about right. all right. Well, Tyler, if anyone wants to reach out and learn more about inpatient rehab, how can they get in touch?
So you can reach out to me on Instagram at Tyler Roman. You can send me a DM there. That's really the only social media I use. Or you can always feel free to shoot me an email at TylerRoman@iCloud.com.
Excellent. All right. So thanks for listening, everybody. We're so glad that you joined us here today. I hope you're able to take this information that Tyler has shared with us to help it nourish your practice so that you can go out and flourish and be awesome.